Hi, welcome to Leading Agile Sound Notes. My name is Dave Pryor. This is Iteration 5, and today my guest is Adam Ash, who's a coach that works for Leading Agile. And Adam and I have had the good fortune to have worked together for a number of years at another company as well as Leading Agile. So Adam, thank you for taking some time out of your day today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks, Dave.
So can you give the folks that are listening, in case they're not familiar with you, can you give them a little bit of background on what you focus on in work and kind of how you got to coaching as a profession?
Sure, absolutely. So I started my career many years ago really working as a product manager, trying to get things out the door in the wireless applications field and then various other organizations doing content management systems, things like that. And as I started getting more and more into product management, I had more and more frustration of actually getting my products out the door. So slowly but surely, I started dealing with process where Agile became a thing and very, very interesting to me. So I started applying more Agile methodology or Agile thought or process to my product management duties. And then over time, I wound up actually being more involved with process than I was with product. So over time, I became the person at organizations that really helped transform them to doing things more efficiently and better.
Okay. So, and you've mentioned, when we've spoken before, you've talked about your passion for helping people with on the product side, which is interesting. I mean, given your background, I feel like all the work that I do in coaching or teaching is always trying to help the former version of myself. And it sounds like you may be kind of in the same camp there.
That's right.
Not helping me, but helping you.
That's right. Well, I think it tends to fall that way. It makes it, I think that's because we understand the problems that people like us are having or they're struggling through. So it actually makes it a little bit more personal for us, I think, in that case. So while I certainly enjoy working with teams and growing organizations in that way, really setting up teams and setting up projects and helping them transform to Agile that way, more and more I've come across the challenge of the business organization or our product owner organizations not really understanding how to define what they actually want us to build for them, or really whole organizations that don't really have strategy based against what they're trying to achieve. And so no matter how amazing your teams are and their abilities to actually do development and testing, if you're not actually building something of value or you don't know what the next thing is that you need to build, it really becomes what I consider the fuel to the engine really runs out rather quickly.
So let's say that I'm a big company and I want to switch over to Agile. And I contact Leading Agile. I say, hey, I need some people to come in here and set up my teams to do Agile. And it's all about this tactical deployment of making the company Agile. That seems like it would be counter to what you were just describing a little bit.
It would seem that way a little bit. I think that the challenge is ultimately that if you have a great teams of people doing work, you're only as good as what you're supplying them to do, what work they are actually able to do. So I think that when we look at organizations, usually it's technology organizations more often than others that bring us in to help solve a problem. And very often the problem is the problem has become traditional, where we have people saying our teams aren't effective enough, they're not fast enough, the quality isn't that good, they're not organized, whatever it is that it comes around our technology organizations. But when you dig a little deeper, number one, you realize maybe the organizations aren't that sideways. But number two, it's usually when we talk about the fact that we need to talk about a vertical slice of the organization, you really need to start with what are we actually building? How have we defined it? What are the goals we're trying to achieve? How are we going to measure that we're achieving those goals? And so it really is part and parcel of what we do. We just very often start working from the bottom up. And we don't always have the opportunity to work from the top down, which either could work, but I think both are necessary at some point.
So this is maybe a slightly different approach. I mean, you could have folks coming in at the tactical level working with the teams, but it sounds like you're kind of advocating for organizations also taking a more strategic look at the portfolio and not just saying let's install Agile, but let's take a look at our whole, you know, workscape and see what stuff makes sense to do and how to figure out what the right stuff to do is.
That's right. I think that as the Agile world matures, we're moving beyond Agile meaning change the way we do work or the teams we do work with, to change the way we actually run our organization and interact with each other. So I think that becomes a bigger and bigger kind of issue that we're tackling. And I think it's just as we mature our whole world, basically, it's something that we've noticed, or I've noticed in the last years especially, has become a larger and larger gap that people expect things to happen. Agile has become, oh, we'll just do things faster or things will get out the door, but without really regard of actually what that is. One of the challenges I have, and I think we have in our community, is how do we actually help people understand the value of what we're building? I think that's one of our biggest challenges. And if you're going to define value, which is a challenge enough in itself, then you also have to measure what you're doing. So those things become part and parcel to, you know, being, I think, long-term success of anything we do.
So how do you quantify value? Or how do you coach organizations to figure that out? Or what questions should they be asking?
That's an excellent question. Well, that's a great question. And what's funny about that is there's a way I approach it, which we'll discuss, and there's a way that I think that we could talk about it for any organization that might be a little bit different depending on what the organization's trying to achieve. So the first thing I'd want to do, and which I do, you could leave that in. So the first thing I want to achieve...
Ladies and gentlemen, Adam Ash. He'll be here all week.
That's right. No problem. I think the most important thing is to really get the organization to define what they're trying to achieve. And that could change as often as monthly or quarterly or yearly. But often organizations don't really define. So if they want to increase the number of users of a system, they want to change the behavior of people, they want to make more money, all of those things are valid goals. And I think that, number one, really trying to define what that is. The second thing we want to do is really separate what we're building from what we're trying to achieve. So very often we have people that say, if we only built this, we would achieve that. And that's not necessarily the case. Very often we find that building something new isn't really what their problem is. Their content strategy might be their problem, or the content itself might be a problem. And it's certainly cheaper to produce content than it is to change your technology. So we really want to help them define what's valuable to them. And whatever that is, we want to also be able to measure it. So I have a rule that I like to impose on people that we work with, and basically say, if you're going to write a requirement, any user story or any requirement, you also have to talk about what it is specifically you're going to measure when it's in production to know that it's moving in the direction you need it to move in. And even though traditionally a user story would have that, something like that, as a user I would like to, so I can, I really want to be very specific about having product managers and product people say, I am adding this button because I think more people will click on it because whatever, or I want to add this feature or function because I think this will change the behavior or whatever. I think that it's important that when we define specific measurements, ways to measure something and what we're going to measure, it gives a little more accountability to the business to go back and do it. Very often, and just to go back a little bit of what we were saying earlier about tactical versus strategic, is that when organizations build something and deliver it, very often they consider the project done. But the project isn't done, and the product isn't done until people are using it and we're measuring the result of what we've. So the technology part of our show might be over, but our business part continues. And if we apply agility to business, we have to understand that's a bigger cycle, that with demand management and content strategy and real feedback into our system, which doesn't happen unless we're defining what it is we're going to build and why we're building it.
But this does create a really interesting problem, though. I mean, it seems to me like when people used to talk about value, they would say, we measure value by looking at value. And that was kind of the end of it. Like, there was a circular loop. And now there's people trying to figure out how to quantify it. And it sounds to me like you're advocating at the user story level, there has to be a way to quantify this succeeded or failed, which I think is awesome. And I disagree with you a little bit. I don't think that people necessarily have that most of the time. and they might say, I'll know it's done when, but that doesn't mean they know if it succeeded or not. But regardless, you build this thing, you put it into production. Let's say it's to change user behavior. The lag between finishing building that thing and knowing whether or not it added the value that you expected is significant if you're working in very short iterations and you're trying to reprioritize work for the next 2 weeks. Any value guesses or, you know, estimates, whatever forecasts you're making, the lag between you kind of saying this is what I think and seeing the results is, it's going to be hard to play against that. I mean, you're just, I guess, going to be looking at these variances over time, but you're flying blind in the beginning.
That's right, you are. So two things we want to do. Obviously, if we can, we want to get things into production as quickly as possible so people can use them, which isn't always possible. It's not always the way we build,
right,
but it would be helpful. But I think that in general, just the fact that we're acknowledging we know what we're going to be measuring and we have a reason for asking for it, frankly, I think we get value from, and I don't disagree with what you've said, so I'll rephrase a little bit. I want my product owners, when they ask for stories, when they ask for features and functionality, to have a little bit more in-depth thought about what they're trying to achieve by doing it. So it doesn't become build this for me. It becomes build this for me because I think it'll do this.
So it's like they're forming a hypothesis they want to test.
Yes, exactly. And so there's inherent value in just people thinking through what they're asking for a little bit more. So that kind of reduces the risk a little bit up front because it's not, hey, let's just throw five things against the wall. It's, I've thought through these five things. I think they're important. That also helps to prioritize. So I'm a little more explicit about what I'm trying to achieve so I can map more directly to the strategies or the goals that I've put out for myself. So at the organization I'm working in now, one of their goals is to double the number of premium customers they have over the next few years. And everything we build when we are working with teams that are building things to try to achieve this goal are all in the context of, does this map, is there a value stream that we can actually map what we're building to this goal of doubling the number of premium customers over the next 3 to 5 years? So it's just helping to put a little more thought behind it. Yes, we won't know right away whether we're moving that needle in the amount we need to, but we can, as we go, see if we're getting a change in behavior that might actually predict that we're going to get to that goal.
I think what you said is really important. I mean, one of the things you just talked about was the fact that before they decide, hey, we're all going to switch over to Agile, there's got to be a reason. And I think this is a shift. I don't know if you feel this way or not, but the idea of Agile transformation has gone from being just do this, it'll make the world better, you'll do stuff better, to now it's more a means to an end. It's not just let's go be Agile because that'll give us more transparency and it'll just be better for everybody. But I think it seems to me like people are starting to recognize that Agile's not the goal. Agile's a way to get to the goal. But if you don't know what the goal is, you're kind of screwed to begin with.
That's exactly right. I go into rooms very often saying that when they say, should we use Agile or Waterfall, or Waterfall's better for this kind of project, or Agile's better for that kind of project. And then I say, well, I wouldn't start any project if I didn't know what I was going to build. And very often, Agile has that reputation because we talk about iterating through things. People kind of think, well, if you're just going to iterate through things, I don't need to know what I'm trying to do. I could figure it out. And I wouldn't want to be on any project that's just trying to figure out what we're doing. So I think that's really important. You're exactly right. I think that my experience with this current client, but also in many that I've seen in the past, is, and I think the culture, the place I'm at, is an older culture. It's been changing slowly since we've arrived, which is really just a little more than 7 or 8 months right now. But what's funny is when we got there, I really believe what you're saying is true. They thought, oh, we'll just make teams agile and we'll see this great result. When we started really digging and started incorporating business people and QA people and technology people and architects into our into our transformation, it's become a definite different viewpoint on, oh, this is definitely not what I thought Agile was, or I didn't think this was going to involve all of these people, or, you know, this is more complicated than I thought it was going to be.
It's way harder than I thought. All of those things are true. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, nothing's easy. And I think that's really, we're at that point where the people that have brought us in are saying to themselves, well, what are you doing for me directly? And they thought, well, we're just going to come in and do some teams, where they don't realize their teams aren't building anything valuable. And so that's really our problem. It's not that, you know, you have a team problem. You have a whole value problem.
Well, right. And so, the fact that the teams aren't building anything valuable is not the team's fault. It's probably the fault of the organization not giving clarity for the teams on this is what is valuable.
No question. And it, although there's quite an extreme to where I am now, and I'll explain, basically we're moving from an organization that values utilization. So we have whole fleets of managers. We have probably more managers than actual workers in this organization. And they are tasked with making sure that the people that work for them are utilized 100% every week on multiple projects. So on average, people are on 2 to 5 different projects, and they're basically booked for 40 hours a week across those projects. And we're, of course, coming in and saying, that doesn't work. You need to dedicate people
to need to let them go to the bathroom periodically.
You need to let them go to the bathroom, which is, I say very often, except lunch and bathroom. You might want to include those things.
Yeah.
But, you know, I say that they don't understand dedicated teams, and then they don't understand the difference of value versus output, right? Outcome versus output. So outcome is something valuable I could measure. Output is just, you know, work and churning. I had a mentor recently who basically said, I like the phrase she used. She said, we're creating, I want to create light, not heat. Right?
Oh, that's cool.
I want to reduce, it is cool. And you might know her, Sue Burke.
Don't know her.
You might have met her over time. I'll introduce you one day. She's really, who I consider someone who's on the forefront of good requirements and kind of really great analysis for what we do. But she used that phrase, so I like to use it a lot, where, you know, it's what we're doing is just people working isn't creating value. People working on important things creates value. And, you know, it's funny because I'm one day I'm going to come up with this metaphor, and maybe you can assist me one day, but I see what we do is very much a green or eco-friendly type of thing, right, type of functionality, right, or the way we do our systems. Basically, we're trying to conserve our energy and then put out more using the less amount of energy, right? So there's a green, you know, element to this, a very friendly kind of thing that says, look, we want to produce valuable things that go out of the system with the least amount of work. The other metaphor I use for myself is just to say, you know, when you're running on a treadmill, you're not getting anywhere, but you're actually expending a lot of effort, but yeah, you're not moving. And I think that's the other kind of thing, that we have a lot of busy people, but they're not doing anything important or at least valuable for the organization. And that's it probably highlighted more where I am now, because their culture is so different from what we're coming from to going to. But of course, you see things like that everywhere.
But I think to stick with the treadmill thing for a minute, because this is kind of interesting to me. If what you're measuring is my ability to get somewhere, then yeah, that time spent on the treadmill is waste. You're there's a lot of activity, but you're not getting anywhere. But if your time on that treadmill, if the goal is not to get somewhere but to burn, say, calories, then depending on how you're spending your time on the treadmill, that could be very effective or not very effective. But if you don't have that sorted out ahead of time, you don't have clarity on what you're actually trying to achieve or how you're going to go about doing it.
That's very true. My goal is always, right, if my goal is to burn calories, a treadmill is fine. If my goal is to go a mile down the road, a treadmill doesn't work. And really, in business, our goal isn't really to burn hours. It's to produce something that will bring money back into the organization.
Actually, that's kind of a cool thing. If the purpose of the company was to use up as much human energy as possible, utilization would be a very important thing to track.
That's right. That's exactly right. And I think that that's part of what we've gotten off the track from, because let's face it, it is a major challenge in anywhere we go to try to define what value is. And so when it's really hard to do, it's easier not to do it, right? And then just something easy. I know how many hours you worked, right?
Right.
So I think, you know, it's easy to track hours. It's hard to track your value. And so we default to one, even though it doesn't get us anywhere. And I think that's really important to understand that, you know, we have people that are literally working on things. And I hear this all the time. We need to spend this money, right?
Yeah.
Because we,
so we get more. Budget.
Right. We need to spend this money so we get more. But as long as we spend the money, we'll get more money. But no one measures the value of what we're actually building. So it's, doesn't matter. And I think that's the kind of thing that we see often, and we're, you know, I'm seeing right now, is that we're spending the money, but we're not getting anything in return for it. And it's a scary prospect, because what we're really saying is, I'm going to add accountability into a system that doesn't have any accountability. I'm going to try to measure things that we're not currently measuring, that may be a little not as specific, right? A hard number is an hour. I know what that is. How do I measure how much money I made in that hour? And really, ultimately, what I tell customers, and I actually, when I learned this a few years ago, I had an epiphany of my own where I was working with a bank, and I basically said, these people don't, and I was dealing with some executives, and I realized not one of these people that I'm speaking to care about the methodology I'm using. They just want to know how they're going to make money and how I'm going to help them make more money. And I kind of realized that, even though it sounds maybe cold or callous or just, you know, clinical, really the only thing we are doing in an organization, no matter what, when we oppose, you know, old systems and impose a new one, is where does the money come from? How do we make more money? How do we actually define what we're doing, not lose money? It's all about money. So we very often cover it up with other things. But ultimately, I want people to think about, when I work for someone, they pay me. And that money comes from being successful. They're doing business. They're making money. So if my company isn't making money, the first thing they're going to do is stop paying me, right? So I want people to think about everything they do as they're using their own money to actually invest in themselves into this business. So everything we do is an investment in the business. The business is making money. They are able to pay me. You know, and I think that people kind of disconnect themselves from the business and the money they make from the money that's in my pocket. And if more people thought of the business, the money they make, as the money they're helping the business make, they might actually be more, not necessarily frugal, but maybe make better choices with where they spend it.
Yeah, I mean, that would go at all levels. It's that one might, it seems a little bit more complicated to me than the value question.
It is a
talking about a massive cultural change. But so just to stick with the value thing, because the other thing seems too big and scary for me to even think about.
Sure.
Do you see an evolution in how people are trying to talk about values? What I'm wondering is if down the road this is going to, if you think this will continue to mature, like what you just talked about. I could see how, like, I could say, well, I think this is this valuable, and in 6 months we'll know because we'll have these results. And if I did that enough, you'd be able to look at, for me as an individual, what my variance was in terms of predicting value. Almost like an earned value type of measurement kind of thing with schedule variance.
That's right.
But do you see a maturation in the questions people are asking and how they're trying to calculate perceived versus realized value?
I think the conversation is beginning. I think that it doesn't happen naturally. I think we have to actually introduce the concept most of the time. But yes, once we're in there and people understand that we have to measure these things, it really becomes incumbent upon people to start figuring out how to measure the value of people and what they're producing. And it goes back to that, right? I worked for an organization a few years ago, and I basically said they wanted me to help them do their budgeting for the next year. I said, okay, what do you usually do? Well, we take a look at all the projects that we're going to have, and then we just go into a room and say that one's going to take 3 months and that one's going to take 6 months, and it's going to cost us $50 million. And I said, how accurate are you? And they said, we're 100% wrong every year.
There's something to be said for consistency.
I said, that's great. Okay. And they said, can you help me? And I said, yeah, I can help you. You know, I think there are ways to actually do better at kind of, you know, estimating what we're going to be doing and how long it's going to take. And it'll involve more people, and it'll involve, you know, maybe having people who are able to do work versus people that don't, really looking at things and giving them a little more thought. He said to me, well, we can't waste time with that. And we don't want those people doing that. So we'll just do it our old way every time.
Yeah.
And so what did they do? The next year, they were 100% wrong again. So I think that, you know, when I think that's part of our business is that you could be wrong. You could be an expert and really say, I want this feature or functionality because I think it's going to do this, and think it through. And sometimes you'll be wrong, right? Sometimes there's an unknown. I didn't understand my market well enough, or I didn't predict the behavior people would prefer well enough, or just completely unknowns, you know, right? Because I think one of the things you learn as a product manager at some point is that as a product manager, I have a point of view of how people are going to interact with the software or the features or functionality put out. But in reality, they do something completely different, right? Unexpected, or just not the way I expected it to be done. Where we don't measure that, right? So if someone spends $1 million and they don't get any value for it, and they don't know why they didn't get any value for it, that's one thing. But if someone spends $1 million and really had a good assumption, and we learned something from it, and our next step moved us in the right direction based on that learning experience, maybe that's valuable. So I think that that's part of what we're trying to do, is just get people to start thinking about a little more of what they're trying to achieve, so that it's not a random collection of guesses. It's more of a well thought out next step.
So if you were going to give some advice to, you know, any product owner or product owner team, somebody you're going to be working with in the future, or who is just trying to be successful with this stuff, what guidance would you give them to prepare for you to get there, to be ready to hit the ground running and to start to have answers to some of those questions?
Sure. The first thing I would want people to do is really, really think through what it is they're trying to achieve. And once again, it doesn't have to be a product-specific thing. It has to be a goal-specific thing. Understanding the goals of the organization is critical. I think even now where I'm working, if you ask 10 people what the goal of the organization is right now, they'll give you 10 answers. So I think having goals defined and having people across the organization agree and understand what those goals are, number one thing you could do. And then really the next step is really to then start building our backlogs and our product lines or whatever we're trying to achieve around those things. So that's really critical. The second thing is, same vein, is that anyone who's going to be involved with the project should all agree that they're working on the same thing. Because even today, I could walk into a room and I bring people together from different parts of this organization, and they'll have three different points of view of what we're in the room for, right? I thought I was working on this, and oh, I thought I was working on that. So having agreement across those people, really important. I think that in the last few years, and you might be doing this as well, I started a process where I don't start any project, and before I even kick off a project, I get all of the executives and stakeholders and kind of important people in a room, decision makers in a room, and have them all agree that what we're talking about and what our goals are and the kind of language that we're using is all the same, and we all agree to it before we leave that room, so that later someone can't say, oh, I thought you were doing this, or I didn't understand that. That's really important to start off doing that.
I think it's really important, and it seems like common sense, but it's shocking how many places it's not figured out.
It's exactly right. And common sense is, a lot of this is common sense, but to be honest, I haven't seen anyone do this except for when I do it with them, you know, in the last few years. So it's very unusual. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So if people want to find out more about you and more about the work you're doing, they can obviously go to Leading Agile and look in the guides area. But where else can they find you? Are you LinkedIn, Twitter, stuff like that?
I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter. I'm not hidden anywhere. So it's Adam Ash on all of those things, because otherwise it would just be, you know, a mystery. And someday I'll start my own blog up, which I have up there somewhere. But I'll have to start putting stuff up there. Right now, tweeting. I tweet.
Okay, so spell your Twitter name for everybody so they get it right.
So it's great. So my Twitter name is just Adam Ash. It's AdamAsch.
Cool.
And that's on Twitter and LinkedIn.
All right. Thanks, man. I really appreciate you taking time out for this.
It's my pleasure, Dave. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks.